Good morning, Ms. Rajni.
Good morning.
Welcome to Pharma Now.
Thank you.
I've been listening about you for a long time. You are one of that lady who works in a regulatory area. So it's really, I'm very excited to talk about this today.
Sure.
So to start with, I just wanted to understand that you are into so niche field, pharma manufacturing, that go into regulatory. How you started your career?
So that's actually quite an interesting story. By qualification, I'm a synthetic organic chemist from IIT Kanpur, and I started my career with research and development team in Ranbaxy. So I was working in the laboratory with all sorts of smelly and hazardous chemicals and all those things. And I was a part of the development, technology transfer and commercialization. So after about 5 years of working in that lab, then I shifted to regulatory affairs, which was more about interacting with authorities, understanding their requirements, and submitting and representing our dossiers to them. So I learned a lot from there. So for 6 years, I was in regulatory hardcore, and this was with global markets for, say, US, for Europe, for Japan, for Asia markets, for little bit underdeveloped countries also, like Vietnam, Malaysia, and, you know, Saudi Arabia, etc. And then I have worked with the 8 or 9 major biggest pharma companies in India as well as overseas, and that is what probably helped me shape my career, because there was a lot of learning. When you are working in a company, you give a lot, but then you gain a lot also, and you should have the passion to learn and explore, perceive things, you know. You learn from mistakes, you learn from, you know, cultural differences. So I worked in Delhi, I worked in Himachal, I worked in Ahmedabad, I worked in Mumbai, I worked in Hyderabad, and I worked in Shanghai, I worked in Amsterdam also for some time. So everywhere the culture was different, the people were different, and so one has to adapt to the company culture, one has to adapt of how you know, basically it's about teamwork. So I was fortunate, first I was the junior most member of the team as a fresher. So then I learned a lot, and then slowly when you climb the ladder, you know, so you become more responsible, more accountable. So with that, you have to become more humble, you know, rather than getting more, you know, excited about, okay, I'm the boss or something. So building up a second line, building up a team, taking them together, understanding the differences between different team members, delegating the work accordingly. I would know X person of my team is good at something, so I would try to put him or her at that position. I'm very fortunate, I must say here, via your platform, that I never faced any gender bias in any of my companies, 32 years plus. And I'm so thankful. I mean, I'm fortunate and thankful and grateful, I would say, because that is another sort of a challenge for women workers. But there is one interesting thing which I would like to share. There is still a lot of difference between the salary structure between men and women in India, though women may have the same expertise and experience. So many, and then there are issues with designations, you know. There were instances where in one of the companies, I was not given a particular designation which I deserved, because it would have hurt the male ego of certain pre-existing employees. But then I said, no problem, you give me a higher salary, I would be okay with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, going through all these phases, then work. I work even today very sincerely, like I put in efforts. I never take things for granted. And I think that's the reason why probably I've been rewarded by, you know, so many people being in my network. As a person, I have professional integrity, you know, because suppose you ask me for some service. Now I'm a freelance consultant. So I would be doing consultancy for, say, regulatory affairs, for workshops, for training future chemists, future pharmacists, and, you know, middle level and higher level industry management people also with respect to current guidances, soft skill trainings as well as technical trainings. And the most important part, which I believe, it's a two-way process, like, you know, so I pay a lot of attention to the feedback which I get from all these interactions, because it's not always, I think I'm the best, but I may not be. Or I may have to customize certain things with respect to the company requirement or the management requirement. It's not always about getting money, you know, in return. It's the professional respect which you earn the wide network which you get into, like for example in these kinds of platforms also. And one more thing I want to add, sorry, before that, other than industry and this thing, I have since the past 5 years particularly during the corona phase, I have also collaborated with lot many academic institutions, for example NIPER and various pharmacy colleges, you know, private and government colleges, where I actually train students to motivate them for joining the pharma field, and then what changes have occurred, and I've also collaborated with certain private universities, wherein I tell them that the curriculum which you are teaching to the students, to the future, you know, professionals, that is 20 years old. So it's not in sync with what is the current expectation. So when a person from academics, he might be a, you know, pupper or something. Now when they join any industry, they suddenly are expected to perform things, but they are not conversant. One important factor which I would like to add here is what has come off late is the artificial intelligence or the computer expertise. So they don't naturally teach artificial intelligence as a part of the curriculum. Then there is earlier, till 15 years back, we were doing regulatory submissions to various authorities, in a paper format, you send couriers and all those kinds of things. But of late, since the past 10, 15 years, it has become mandatory to do electronic submissions, e-submissions. So when we do that, we have various softwares for that. There are various validations which need to be done with the authorities. For US, it would be different. For Europe, it would be different. So for that, you need upskilling of your personnel. They should know how to upload the data, how to hyperlink things and all those things. So that training is missing during the academic sessions. So what happens in industry, as you know, particularly in private industries, they would not give you time to learn. They want you to perform.
Right.
So I have also been involved to the service providers, like somebody who's selling you the software. So I ensure that they do at least 3-4 hands-on training at the site for the employees, free of cost, of course, so that they are conversant how they're supposed to work. Because the industry will not invest time or money to train them with respect to that. So that's one important aspect. And the best part is that academics, people understand the gaps.
Yeah.
So through these kinds of events and forums, we are trying to rope in government also, that you make some sort of MOUs or some incentives for collaboration, between academics, not only academics and industry, but with the government also. Now that is state government also, as well as the central government also. So as of now, there is no clear-cut procedure for that. There might be a couple of, scattered consultants who say we are into this, but then that's not a uniform sort of thing, So this is what the career path has been. And I have worked with 9 companies in India. The last one was Freya, which was in Hyderabad only. It's an IT solutioning company. I was working from home. That was a new experience for me, working full-time from home. So I worked on-site full-time. Corona mein, I worked online. And at that time, I was doing the entire training and everything free, of course, because I know people could not take the burden, some small enterprises or some things. So, and anyway, I had to kill time because one could not travel on site, And the most exciting part of my career has been when I started, inspecting Indian manufacturing plants to prepare them for upcoming audits, Whatever knowledge I had gained from being a part of the inspection or audit steering committee, I inculcated that, I assimilated that entire knowledge. I put case studies, since I worked in so many companies and so many different therapeutic products. And I explained students or the industry management that this is how we face challenges. This is how we got through or we could not get through. And for this, what was needed to be done and how they can, learn from that and proactively try to, be prepared rather than delaying the approval of their product and business in the long run. So, but that was a tough thing because you have to travel to remote places. As you know, manufacturing sites are way away from the city and you don't have that many facilities there, in terms of comfort level. And one important thing which I wrote to stress is that in the manufacturing plants mainly you hardly have any ladies out there, so that's another different sort of a challenge, I would say, not really, but then everything has been taken care of. But yes, one does have apprehensions, that will I be able to perform? Because you need to be comfortable to think coherently and try to give the best advice, that thing. And when they come back and say, okay, you had done this exercise for us, we hired you as a consultant, we have come through with flying colors in the audit. So that is the biggest appreciation or happiness which professionally one earns. It's not always about money.
Correct.
So this is what all I have to say, and anything else?
So I think I will come back to the career part once again, and I would like to also understand the experience about during your manufacturing visits, mm-hmm. how was your experience? But mm-hmm. before that, you got me from my audience. I really wanted to understand. There are a lot of alphabets like USFDA, MHRA, PMDA. There are so many regulators, auditors. Can we just put a light on that? What exactly these regulators are, and what they do, why they exist?
Yeah. So since we are into the business of life-saving drugs, so there are two important things which need to be taken care of. One is the efficacy of that drug. That means it should cure the illness. And secondly, is at the same time, it should be safe for use. It should be free from major side effects. If you talk chemistry-wise, you can never make a 100% pure medicine. It is bound to have certain contaminants or certain impurities which are harmful. But if they are restricted to certain levels, which we decide by our specifications, that this thing cannot exceed beyond this much, then it is okay for use, because the benefit is actually outbalancing the bad part of it. Now here what happens is, there were certain incidents, say 50 years ago or say 80 years ago, wherein because of the use of one particular drug, there were many deaths of kids in US. So then they suddenly wanted to know what exactly happened, So then they discovered there was some contamination there, which proved detrimental. So then they said, we need to put in certain regulations. It needs to be regulated. Not necessarily by laws every time, but at least the guidance that you should take care of these things. And then there has to be some people in between who monitor and supervise the quality.
Mm.
So they make sure that all the data is generated as per norms. And they also want to make sure that, it is free from contamination, it is safe for use. So you have clinical trials, etc. So even that clinical trial protocol is first ensured by the US FDA. FDA is the Federal Drug and Food Drug Administration. That is the regulatory body of US. And in Europe, you have several regulatory bodies. It is the EMA, European agency, medicine agency. So these are different names of those agencies. So every country, the first country to do this was US, US FDA. Because first of all, they've got the biggest market size, they're technologically most advanced, and they care a lot about the lives of their patients, their countrymen, their concern. So in US, and a normal person would be much aware of these medical things, because they make sure they're aware, the pharmacists are aware. A pharmacist are governed by laws there. And then whatever I want to make a medicine and sell it in US, I have to pass through all those tests, convincing them that whatever is required has. So then they started drafting guidances for the industry. Now you don't have to follow them 100%, but it's a way forward. Okay, this is the way you have to work. Then you have to submit the analytical data. I cannot just say my medicine is best. So prove me. And there's a one-liner punch which they use in the US FDA. That is, if it is not documented, it is not done. So good documentation practices, So they sort of put across several rules and guidances, and we have to comply. Before that, they review our submissions. Unless we comply to their requirements, they will not grant approval, the marketing license. So you cannot market your drug. So, and secondly, besides the submission, data submission, they also come to see your manufacturing facilities. That are you really working as per good manufacturing practices, or you just written it down? So the inspectors come there. So I'm a part of that thing also now. So we make sure that, their labeling is proper. There is no mix-up of, drugs or something. And the sanitation is proper. We have taken care of water pollutant things. We are not contaminating the atmosphere. And, we are not, there are pesticide problems in manufacturing locations. small insects or something, all those kinds of things, and the air handling units, AHUs, and all those things, the water systems, utilities. So everything is a part of that inspection process. And once they are satisfied that, okay, you are following that, and they want to see the data proving that you're doing it. For example, if you have to monitor something in 24 hours, there has to be a report you did monitor. You have to calibrate, you have to validate your instruments by which you are claiming quality. Yeah? So they check all those things. So once you are through with the dossier submission review and the GMP inspection, then the approval is granted. So the regulatory role is actually to, then science develops. They learn from good and bad experiences from, because they're having the dossiers of several companies. So they know, okay, this is a manufacturing route. Synthesis, the way they make medicines. Everybody will make it a different because it is patent protected also. So in one company, the impurities may be more for the same drug. In the other company, they may not be more. So if it is more, then how they are controlling it and how they are ensuring the right levels. So for that, you have to have a regulatory authority that authorizes. So we call it, in Europe, we call it a marketing authorization application. Mm-hmm. If they okay it, then it is granted. We get a license number. Maybe it's valid sometimes for 3 years or 5 years. So we can then market our drug. In the US, it is the Food and Drug Administration, that's the agency. Then in India, we have a regulatory agency, CDSCO, which is governing all sorts of activities in Indian market, for Indian market. Similarly for, there are different health authorities or agencies in every country. But most of the underdeveloped countries, they are mostly trying to follow the Europe and US pattern. But to comply to Europe and US, you have to do a lot of investment. The challenges in terms of infrastructure, because you have to have all these automated machines, then you have to have skilled manpower to execute it. And most important, these all things are time bound, because you have to market the drug within a particular time period so that you can get the market commercial advantage. So it's a mix of several things. So in pharma companies, we have cross-functional teams, different. We'll have the regulatory team, we'll have the process team, we'll have the manufacturing team, we'll have the stability studies team, we'll have the packaging team, how are you packaging your material. Then we have the marketing team, who's actually ensuring, okay, this customer wants this much amount of the drug. Then you have your procurement cell, which makes sure that the right raw materials are procured to make the right quality of the drug. Even that is under the purview of inspection, you know. And then you have the corporate office, then you have your documentation people, and then regulatory compliance. So we actually at the regulatory department, we are the interface between the company and the regulator. So we are actually representing what the company is doing. So what is important is not only you have to be technically sound, not only you have to make sure that the data is authentic and not hooked up or manipulated and it is linking properly, you also have to present it in a reviewer friendly manner so that the person who is reviewing it is comfortable. So and then if they raise some questions, you are supposed to respond to them within a given timeline. So and then convincing your management, I need this infrastructure, I need this equipment, or I need this software, or I need to train my people to so that they come up to those levels. So that interaction is also there with the regulatory. So it's basically at the receiving end, if you ask me with respect to the data. But then reviewing that data, linking the entire things, making sure nothing is amiss, it is in sync with the regulatory, and then regulations evolve and change very often. You might have started developing a seed. Development of a drug normally takes 1 or 2 years. So I start today. So I'll comply to today's regulations. But maybe by the time I finish up, something new has come up and I need to do that study as well. So all those things have to be managed and squeezed within our timelines, you know. And today's is the time of collaboration. Like we have, this contract research organization, contract manufacturing, companies which do the contract manufacturing for us, because we may not have the time or we may not have the facility to do that. So it's all about collaboration. So this is what is regarding the Indian manufacturing challenges. And yeah.
Just an extended question to this. In last one decade, I think biosimilars have started coming up very aggressively, and India is looking at huge opportunity of biosimilars. For biosimilars product, how these regulatory things are working? Are they modified things, and how it is?
Yeah. So pharmaceuticals and biopharmaceuticals are totally different. In case of pharmaceuticals, we are manufacturing using synthetic processes, chemical transformations. Whereas in case of biopharmaceuticals, it is coming from something from the living organisms, bio means living. So there are two things. One, the biopharmaceuticals are more complex as compared to the pharma. So the regulations are different. The requirements are different. Even though there is a body in the FDA, within the FDA, CDER, which is for reviewing the central drug evaluation reviewers. Then you have, for biologics, it's different. The CBER, biologics, Center for Biologics Evaluation and Review. So what happens is that they are more complex. At the same time, the plus point is just that they are going to definitely have much better therapeutic effect, but at the same time, as of now, they're very costly. Not everybody can afford it. So for example, maybe say 5-10 years back, suppose you have multiple ailments, you know, interconnected, so you are actually taking multiple pills, one for this, one for that, one for this, maybe twice a day, thrice a day. Now here in biosimilars, we target that we make this vaccine single, which may take care of multiple ailments, multiple indications. So that is the plus point. But definitely the biosimilar industry is evolving still in India because of two reasons. One, you have to, like you must have seen to here also, that you have to invest in a lot of bioreactors or different sort of automated systems. So one thing is the cost there. And secondly, we are still struggling with some incentives which are expected from government also. Because it becomes very difficult to bear all that burden. Then you have clinical studies, you know, which is again a very costly affair. Of late, there are a couple of challenges here, like for example, animal toxicity studies. So some countries are agreeing to waive it off because that is again a question mark, you know. So biosimilars have some additional challenges, but then maybe after, say, we are talking today here, maybe if 10 years ahead we meet, probably biosimilars or all these biopharmaceuticals will replace this normal generic medicine, so it's going to be finished. But if everybody cannot afford it, so they will still stick onto that. So there are different regulations, there are different requirements, and there are different machinery required to make products from biopharmaceuticals.
So I think the last question. Who work in the regulatory area, so then, but then I think so many Indian companies are right now scaling them up for the globalization to export business, right? What would be your message to these manufacturing companies, facility startups, in terms of regulatory, what they should follow? What should be your advice?
Yeah, most important part is the quality management system which you start with. So, for example, startups or maybe some smaller companies or even bigger companies, not all companies work in all markets. Some are restricted to, say, US market. Some are restricted to lesser regulated markets. So it depends on that, actually. But my advice would be that, first of all, whatever market you are, it's all business oriented. What are the business aspirations of the particular company or the startup? Now, based on that, you just sort of filter out what all guidances you need to essentially follow, based on which you will form your quality management system. Then you have to have trained and people with the understanding of the significance of following those. It's just not chalta hai sort of thing. Jab kuch hoga to dekhenge, yeah, unless you are caught, it's done. It's not that. Since we are into life-saving drugs, tomorrow I may be consuming that drug or my family may be consuming that drug, if I'm into these practices. So most important is you first have a quality management system. You must have a risk evaluation and management approach. You should know with the kind of processes which you're working, what are the risks associated and how you are mitigating it, right? And that is a proper document which nowadays has to be submitted to the FDA for evaluation. Then you have to have quality by design. That is, that's again a highly scientific way of breaking down your manufacturing process into multiple micro steps, evaluating each step according to the importance. Not all companies follow this approach because, again, it is, you have to do more experimentation, you need more time, you need more sophisticated and sensitive equipments to analyze all those things. So they go by the traditional method. Like we do cooking, ban gaya to ban gaya, or otherwise you follow certain norms out there. So what happens is that quality by design, risk evaluation and mitigation strategies, another very important thing is data integrity. Are you documenting the data? How are you ensuring that nobody is manipulating that data somewhere in between? Now, in the digital age, everything is electronic. So then now you have pluses and minuses. Okay, the minuses are this, that it can be hacked. Cyber crimes are coming up in a big way. So one has to build up the quality management system around these aspects. And then the management, it is the management's responsibility to ensure you have the necessary infrastructure, the necessary skilled manpower, you know, and you need to continuously train your employees onto upcoming, needs. Again, that will be based on your company's business aspirations and the markets where you operate into. Like certain markets would have specific requirements which the other market may not have. So if you have a good business in that market, then it's the management's responsibility to ensure. They cannot say, "Arey, us chal jayega, chal jayega." So quality oversight is one big thing which needs to be there. So I think this is the base.
Yeah.
Once you have that base right, you design the proper standard operating procedures and protocols, and you make sure they're being followed. There is no manipulation. Nobody is trying to do shortcuts. There are shortcuts in life also. So there should be no shortcuts in life, civic trucks also. It's a tough task, and sometimes it's time consuming. We also fumble. We are all humans. But then one good part of authority is if you accept your mistake, they would not punish you that way unless it is detrimental, that it causes death or something, you know. So I think it's a big moral and ethical responsibility also for everybody associated with pharma, you know, whether it is pharmaceuticals, biopharma, whatever. So this is what my message would be to all the...
I think this is really interesting and very insightful. So thanks a lot for your time and this insightful session.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to put across my thoughts out.
Looking forward. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you so much.